Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme. We have another hour of Just Saying It time right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I am your host extraordinaire, at Mr. Cole Thompson. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mr. Cole Thompson. Call into the show, 800-224-2004. We have a great hour for you ahead. Talking all things about Thursday Night Football, my Around the NFL's two-minute warning. Talking Aaron Rodgers, which is fun to me every single time. But I start the show off today with this, or I guess this hour with this. Did you know that Nick Saban loves to troll people? Did you know that Nick Saban is actually really good at trolling people? Because of earlier this week, he has talked about two things. Number one, his breakfast schedule. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the other thing, do you remember, Michael, the joke, D's?
I do.
Yeah, and then what follows with that?
Yes.
He brought that up in a live press conference yesterday. He brought up D's in a live presser in Alabama yesterday. Who in their right mind else would get away with that? Who in their right mind would be able to say D's and then just have the entire media go, oh, clever, Nick. Every media outlet in the big, we went after Brian Kelly for saying the wrong anthem, the wrong motto from a coach in the 1970s. We were ringing for his head. In this PC culture, D's is definitely not flying by. And Nick Saban says it, goes, Medal of Honor. Got to give him the Medal of Honor. Got to give him the Medal of Appreciation. He just so courageous and so brave. That is just Nick Saban to a T. But you got to think about that. Nick Saban is ultimately a troll. He is 70 years old, and he is trolling people with this stuff. More than that, he's enjoying life at age 69, which is nice. It is very nice. Because if every single day he starts his day off with two Little Debbie's oatmeal cream pies and a cup of coffee, who's to say that you can't have desserts for breakfast? If you can't, maybe you're not going to be a six-time national championship winner. Maybe instead, you're just going to be kind of the middle-of-the-pack kind of guy, goes to work every single day, 9 to 5, has your kids screaming at you, you never have a day of success. Enjoy eating sweets for breakfast, if that's the message I take away from it. Because if Nick Saban can win six national championships eating oatmeal raisin cookies every day, you can too.
Time for the two-minute warning around the NFL. No. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Every single day at this hour, we go around the NFL to get you caught up on everything you need to know and much, much more. That's why I call it the two-minute warning. Michael, start the clock.
Arizona Cardinals pass rusher Chandler Jones was relatively quiet about his desire for a new contract in the offseason, then spoke volumes about it on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans with a franchise record tying 5 sacks. On Wednesday, he finally did some talking off the field. Apparently, the 10-year veteran has kept the contract subject out of his mind as well as his mouth.
Yeah. No, he hasn't. No person going into a contract year ever keeps the contract negotiations out of their mouth. And you heard it yesterday. We brought up Jesse Bates. Jesse Bates, to me, at age 25, has the most upside of any safety right now on the market. And that includes Tyrann Mathieu going into next year. Because if he's so much younger and he's so much more profitable, and he could probably get 2, 3, maybe even 4 more contracts, where I think probably Tyrann Mathieu gets maybe two. Chandler Jones, whether you want to admit it or not, has been one of, if not the most dominant pass rusher from the outside linebacker defensive end position since 2012, entering the league out of Syracuse. When he was playing for the New England Patriots and since coming over to Arizona, he has been dominant. Absolutely he has. And he deserves every bit of money coming his way. And when you start looking at deals ahead of what you've seen some players get paid, especially now the TJ Watt deal, the $85 million guaranteed, the, what is it, $115, $118 million? Michael, can you look up what is TJ Watt's deal? But when you look at that, and you see how much success he has had for years as a pass rusher. That's always going to be on your mind. And then you have a 5-sack game against Tennessee, a team that a lot of people are picking to win the AFC South, while a lot of people are also picking you, Arizona, to finish dead last inside of the NFC West. I mean, that says volumes. That to me says immediate volumes. What was the deal?
It's a 4-year, $112 million contract.
$112 million contract. Okay. So you know for a fact, the way Jones has been playing and the way his numbers have been for the last, 5-6 years, he's going to want a brand new deal. He's easily going to want a brand new deal. And he's going to want a deal that comes into that same kind of level. Five sacks in 1 year. Since 2016, so since coming over to Arizona, he's finished with double-digit sacks every year except for 2020. Which, by the way, he was hurt for part of it. He was hurt for most of the 2020 season, so that doesn't really count. He has been a double-digit sack artist, and now he wants to get paid. After a 5-sack game, I'm not thinking about getting paid. Yes, you are. You 100% are thinking about getting paid. Just be honest. Jesse Bates was very honest about it. I had a great game. I want to get paid. I have a chip on my shoulder. Chandler Jones, I am still producing at age 31, and I'm producing at a high-end level. I want to get paid, just like TJ Watt gets paid.
The Green Bay Packers' Week 1 bout against the Saints featured no punch of pizzazz from the defending NFC North champs. The 35-point drubbing by New Orleans was the worst loss of the Aaron Rodgers era, and Devontae Adams says that now this should motivate the team into picking up a win this weekend against the Detroit Lions.
So I saw this stat yesterday, and I could not stop laughing after hearing this. So Aaron Rodgers finished with a career low in a QBR rating at 13.4. Do you know if he would have spiked the ball every single play, just ended the drive right there, boom, boom, right in the ground, he would have finished with an over 20% QBR rating. It would have been higher for him every single play to go, nope, nope, nope. It would have been higher for him to do that than how he played against New Orleans secondary.
You know, I would like to see that one day.
I mean, let's be real. Do you remember the movie, what was it? The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler. Did you
yes,
see that?
I do.
So remember how in the game and how in The Waterboy, they did the exact same thing. Both of Adam Sandler, by the way. That is my probably guilty pleasure actor, not Melissa McCarthy, if any of you heard that from a couple days ago. It's actually probably Adam Sandler. Like, love that guy. More importantly, in both movies, they take knees or they spike the football to run the clock out. It's not the craziest thing in the world. If you're up by like 30 points in the second half, control your clock. Just make yourself punt. If your defense is great, make them have to play it with a 30-point lead. But I do think this. When you look at teams that are very successful and you have seen them for years and years be successful, you know after they suffer a brutal loss, whether it be a close loss or a complete blowout, they're coming with blood the next game. And even though I think that Detroit has played very well in their first game, it's a Monday Night Football. It's on primetime television. You don't think Aaron Rodgers and this team is not going to bail out and just play for it all? They have to, because they are viewed still as a playoff contender and a Super Bowl contender. And if you play bad against a rebuilding New Orleans team and then follow that up with a really, really rebuilding Detroit team, there's a lot more concerns for you. We're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers later in the show, but I will say, this is a game where I don't worry about losing early on because I still think that they're going to be successful. But if they struggle now after Devontae Adams' comments and after what Aaron Rodgers has said and all that, you're in a lot of trouble this year. Like, you're in a lot of trouble if you're Green Bay.
So much for Odell Beckham Jr. making his return this soon, right? Browns coach Kevin Stefanski avoided being coy in the lead-up to Cleveland's second game of the season, telling reporters Wednesday that Beckham would not play Sunday against the Houston Texans. Beckham was listed as a limited participant in Cleveland's Wednesday injury report.
At what point are we starting to see that maybe New York actually won the trade in the Cleveland deal? I mean, honestly, so think about this. They got two draft picks, and they got Jabril Peppers. Jabril Peppers has played very well as a rotational safety, as a strong safety for the New York Giants in his last 3 years. They also got Dexter Lawrence out of the deal. Dexter Lawrence has been a very good defensive lineman for New York, pairing up with Leonard Williams, and for a while, before he left in free agency, pairing up with Dalvin Tomlinson. He is very good his last 2 years. Not superstar, but very good. Odell Beckham has not had a really profitable season since arriving in Cleveland. He hasn't. I mean, yeah, he has a. I think he has a 1,000-yard season in 2019, but he also only had 4 touchdowns. I get that he's coming off a torn ACL, but time and time again, it just feels like there's more excuses we're making for this guy. And it's not to say that he still isn't successful. I think people always overreact when I say, oh, guy's not good. No, he's just not top 10 material. And I don't think he will ever get back to top 10 wide receiver material. It's very clear right now that he is easily the number 2 wide receiver on this team behind Jarvis Landry. And you can make a valid argument that if Rashad Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones continue to play that the way that they are, or they build off of what they did last season, there's a very good shot that he's the number 3 receiver on this team. I'm not here to say that Odell Beckham Jr. isn't successful, but we continue to wait to see if this guy can make something of himself, and it never happens. It just never happens. It always is just the same story. At some point, use it to kind of swing and miss. I feel like the Cleveland Browns, as soon as they can, they're going to move off Odell Beckham because they have to, because it's not working, and it doesn't feel like it's ever going to really work in Cleveland. It just doesn't.
Los Angeles Chargers receiver Mike Williams got off to a hot start in Week 1. That success could continue in Week 2 against the Dallas Cowboys defense that gave up 379 passing yards and 2 100-yard gains to a pair of Buccaneers receivers in the opener against Best of all, Williams knows it, saying that Tampa Bay looked like they were having fun against them in coverage.
Well, that's fighting words. Like, that's straight up fighting words if you're me. When I look at that, that is straight up just like, hey, are you good? Nah, you're not good. You're not even close. I will say I am really high on Los Angeles. I put them in my playoffs. I've had them as my number 7 seed. And Mike Williams looked really good going into a contract year. Like, if I am Tom Telesco, I'm trying to get a deal done as soon as possible because I do not want to let this guy walk in free agency because he's a really good number 2 wide receiver. And Dallas right now is struggling to find that number 2 cornerback. So if I'm a fantasy guy, I'm actually looking at Mike Williams in my matchup this week because I know for a fact that you're going to be playing either Jordan Lewis or Trevon Diggs inside on Keenan Allen. If you play Jordan Lewis inside and he gets burnt consistently, you have to move Trevon Diggs inside just to cover Allen. And if that's the case, you're leaving Mike Williams open, wide open every single play. Dallas right now just feels so lost because of all the injuries that they're having and how much they are going to have to build and kind of play off of that. But I look on the flip side, Los Angeles can make a statement right now and say that they're here to contend with a big-time victory over a team that really went toe-to-toe with Tampa Bay until the final minutes of the game. They really went toe-to-toe all the way to the end of the game. I will say, if they don't make that statement, and if Dallas comes up and makes that statement, Mike Williams is never allowed to talk crap anymore. Like, you basically got to go sit in the corner, take your time out, realize, all right, I spoke too soon. Very well. Have a nice day, everybody. There you have it. 2-minute warning right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up your parts for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Heck, they'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your front door with usual free shipping on orders over $35. Get your parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts and visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So I want to talk real fast about USC and one of the hires that they were going to consider to make. And I know a lot of people are putting him out there. Why I don't think it works. And it's not a knock against him. It actually is a compliment for him. Mario Cristobal. I love Mario Cristobal. And maybe it's because of when I was at Alabama, he was at Alabama. He was the offensive line coach. He had been kind of on the south side when he was at Florida International. Things didn't work out. Kind of goes back there. Is a Miami-born and bred guy. People are actually saying that he may leave for Miami should they fire Manny Diaz. But I look at Mario Cristobal, who has done a fantastic job for the Ducks and finally gets a fresh start. Why would I leave Oregon? And that's a question I actually want to ask. I want you guys to kind of throw out to me. I know I said that Oregon is not a top 10 coaching job in the NFL. 800-224-2004. Explain to me in layman's terms why I would go with the likes of Mario Cristobal at USC. Or more importantly, why if I am USC, I mean, if I'm Mario Cristobal, why do I want to go to USC? My offense is working. My defense is playing very well. More importantly, I am winning at a program that has slowly started to take over as the next big powerhouse in the Pac-12. The two biggest wins of college football season right now have come from Pac-12 teams. And that's something that I will say about the Pac-12, that even though I don't believe they're quote-unquote back, they are going to be a team to watch for, at least in more so the New Year's Six Bowl games. Every single year, Pac-12 is represented in the Fiesta Bowl or the Rose Bowl, depending on what the schedule is for the college football playoff. But honestly, I could see two teams getting in right now. I could see UCLA, if they continue to run the table, getting in and representing the Pac-12 as a New Year's Six Bowl team. And I could see Oregon getting in the college football playoff. I get USC is a more prominent job. And in the spectacle of all things, it is bigger. But at the same time, I'm winning in the Pac-12 with a program that has basically given me all the necessities, all the resources, and also it feels a little easier to recruit right now. When I think of everything about USC, I have to kind of feel like it's around the same thing of UCLA. I've said this on the show before. Remember when Chip Kelly entered UCLA? He basically had to build the program back up from the bottom. He basically took whatever nuts and bolts that weren't rusted or, you know, off the shelves and off the rails, put them together and made something of a product. At one point during spring football, he only had 50 players on the staff. 50 players. He's now 2-0. The team is ranked inside the top 15 for the first time, I think, in 4 years. And UCLA, to me, feels like they're thriving. And they're going to be a team on the rise. Mario Cristobal has nothing to worry about at Oregon. And he also has that Nike money being fronted in on Brinks trucks left and right. After getting probably the biggest win in Oregon history in the last decade, Oregon now feels like they are controlling the Pac-12. And they're going to control the Pac-12. In my opinion, if you look at USC, it's going to take time to rebuild. It's not going to come easy overnight. It's not going to come in just days. It's going to come in years. Would you rather go to USC at age 50 and try to rebuild this program, even though you have to hire a right staff around you? You have to also recruit, which, by the way, Mario Cristobal arguably is the best recruiting head coach in the country. He absolutely is. His staff maybe is not that same level as the Alabamas, the Texases, the A&Ms, the Floridas of the world. But him as a head coach, easily the best recruiter in college football. If you're going to go this way, you're going to go into a rebuild. Why go into a rebuild when you know for sure right now you're winning? And you could be winning for a while. Everyone thinks about the Pac-12. They think of USC because of what dominance Pete Carroll had. What dominance other coaches have had in the past, how they've been one of the more successful programs in college football. But right now, and for probably the last 10 years, Oregon has been the team. Since Chip Kelly took over way back in 2008, Oregon has been the team to beat. They've been to a college football playoff with Mark Herflick. They've been to a national title game with Chip Kelly. They've been to actually two national title games in the last, what is it, 15 years. You can't say that about USC. And right now, Cristobal is going to only not only have Oregon playing smart football and consecutive football, they're also going to have Oregon winning. They're winning in recruiting. They're winning on the football field. And more importantly, this win against Ohio State basically just got Mario Cristobal probably about a five-year extension, about a $2.1 million pay raise. You think that USC is going to want to match that? I don't think so. I like Mario Cristobal. And everyone says, oh, watch out for him. I don't think he's the guy. But I also think that he's in the right spot at the right location. You could always consider this. You can either rebuild a team and hope for the best, or you can see this team is very successful at the plane they are right now and maybe just continue to rise. If I look at everything that you have in Eugene with Nike, with the uniforms, with recruiting, with an easy sales pitch, and the fans buying into the culture, I actually take Oregon right now over the likes of USC. Maybe long term I take USC. But if I'm Mario Cristobal, I keep USC in my back pocket. They have to offer me an extensive amount to get me out of Eugene. I just feel like right now Oregon is the better program, and it's easier for Mario Cristobal to win and continue to be successful. Every team is looking for their own, I would say, Bear Bryant, Nick Saban. Maybe at Oregon, you find yours in Mario Cristobal. Just maybe you do. So let's turn our attention over to Thursday Night Football. We got kickoff at 8:30 tonight at FedEx Field in Washington, D.C., or Landover, Maryland, I guess, if you really think about it. Washington football team versus the New York football Giants. Anybody out there who thinks that Saquon Barkley is going to have a good day, just brace yourself. He's not. It's already been reported that he is going to be limited due to his knee. But even though he is going to be limited, he had this to say about why he needs to step up and why the New York Giants need to step up as a team going into week two.
You got to capitalize. We're talented. We know the talent that we have. We trust the coaching staff that we have. But it's on us to go out there and capitalize. And that's offense, defense, and special team. And I feel like we're able to do that more consistent. The season's going to play out how we want to play out. I think that's where, you know, we find ourselves, whether it's from when I've been here or the last 2 years or even last week, just those situations we didn't capitalize on. And that puts yourself behind in ball games and put yourself out of position to win games. And we have the talent. We have the playmakers. You know, I think you guys saw what Shep's able to do in the slot, KG making plays, and DJ making big throws. The list goes on and on. You know, we have so much talent on the team, so we just got to go out there and capitalize, and so we can be able to show our talent and show how special we can be as an offense and a team as a whole.
Yeah, you got to show off, but the person who really has to show off is Daniel Jones. To me, this is Daniel Jones' prove-it moment. You're welcome to the NFL, I can hang moment. Guy has over 40 turnovers in 2 years. This doesn't work. Multiple games of fumbles. Multiple games of interceptions. And last week against the Denver Broncos, I'll give credit. Denver's defense looks good. Denver's defense always looks good. They were not able to move the ball. They were not able to be consistent. There was not a thing that you look at pound for pound that makes me say, oh boy, I think for sure the Giants are going to contend. Just doesn't look that way. Even though he threw for 287 yards, this is a defense that is supposed to be really good, but you have to be able to move the ball against the number one probable defense in the NFC. If I am Daniel Jones, this is the most pivotal game of my career. This really is. And why is that? Because right now, more and more, you're seeing quarterbacks drop down the charts inside of the NFL draft. You're not seeing Spencer Rattler go number one in mock drafts anymore. You're not seeing Sam Howell be the number one pick. You're seeing them fall to number six. You're seeing them fall to number eight. You're seeing them fall to number 11. Carson Strong, Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, they're all falling outside the top 10, which means, depending on where New York and Chicago are drafting, the Giants could have two picks inside the top 10 this year. They really could. Because remember, Justin Fields, to move up to number 11 to get him, the Giants got a first-round pick. That's next year. If I have two picks inside the top 10 and Daniel Jones continues to disappoint and he doesn't live up to the standard, am I not going to use a pick on a first-round quarterback? This is a chance for me to win. My defense is loaded. I have paid players that I believe in are going to make a difference. I also have wide receivers now that are successful. Guys like Darius Slayton and Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney and Sterling Shepard and much, much more. I have a run game that hopefully will rebound with Saquon Barkley once his knee is healthy and he's going on 1 year from the injury. I have all the pieces to be good. Maybe my offensive line needs some help. And I can do that by using one of those picks on maybe like a Kenyon Green or a Charles Crossan or a Zion Nelson from Miami. I could use one of those picks on those players. But I need to make sure I have the quarterback right. Time and time again, I talk to you about this. The two most important things for an offense are not wide receivers. It's not the run game. It's not having a flexible tight end. It's about having the right quarterback who can consistently move the ball, limit the turnovers, and control the time of the clock. But for a quarterback to be able to do that, you have to have a good offensive line. Daniel Jones is playing for his job tonight. Daniel Jones is playing to show the franchise, I can still work. I can still be a solid option. And against a number one defense that struggled on third down last week, I can make the most of it. If not, I honestly think Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman are going to have some serious conversations and maybe bring in another quarterback.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
It's funny to me how a loss can change your outlook of things. Right now, the Green Bay Packers, their entire offseason storyline was Aaron Rodgers, wasn't it? Wasn't Aaron Rodgers the entire time? About how Aaron wanted this done for the program, how he needed this done, how this was exactly the way you wanted it to be. Add my players, add my names. Wasn't that the storyline the entire offseason? And then what happens week one? Aaron Rodgers is the problem. It's not that the Green Bay Packers were not good, because Green Bay sucked. I mean, they played simple. They were terrible. They were absolutely just god-awful. But part of that was Aaron. I kind of mentioned this. If Aaron would have spiked the ball every single play, he actually would have had a higher QBR rating on the day. But what's interesting is, remember what Aaron... Michael, did you see this? Audience, did you see this? Let me know if you did. 800-224-2004. Did you watch him after the press conference, after postgame?
I did not.
Okay, so he looks very disheveled. He has the long hair. He's got the man bun. Got a big old kind of grizzled beard kind of looking thing. Looks like definitely a guy who's not in the mood for football. Looks like a guy who's more so in the mood for dove hunting, in my opinion. He goes on the Pat McAfee show, and he says this. But we'll talk about what – it's not about what he said. It's about how he said it. Here's the first clip.
It might be a freak out outside of the facility. I think it's just a – you know, it's a good learning lesson for us. You know, we can't play like that. We can't start a game like that. I feel like – I said after the game, our energy level was a little bit low before the game. You know, we got to do a better job responding to adversity. So, look, there's not much to say. We got our asses beat, you know, by 35 points. We're all frustrated about it, but you just move on. We got 16 more to go. You know, we can't dwell on this one and let it impact this next week. We got NFC North opponent. We got a Monday night football game. Any great competitor, you know, is never okay with losing, but I think the response has to be, you know, the thing you set your mind to, where, you know, this is Tuesday already. You know, Monday, yesterday, you know, you watch the film, you flush it, and Tuesday you start moving on to the next opponent.
So two things about that. Number one, it's interesting how not only was he saying, oh, you know, we lost this game. We lost. It was my fault. Like, it was we all got blown out. No me, no we, no I. It was just we again. It was all we, no me. But if you didn't watch the Pat McAfee show live, which is where this audio is from, Aaron Rodgers shaved his beard. Aaron Rodgers trimmed his hair. Aaron Rodgers now looks the part of what we think of Aaron Rodgers. Sure, he still has the long hair. Sure, he still has the, you know, the man bun. But he looks more clean-cut Aaron. You know what that tells me in more so ways than one? Now he has to play hardball with ownership. Because at the end of the day, you get everything you want. You're supposed to go out on top. This is not the way the last dance goes. The last dance with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, and that was the photo that he and Devontae Adams posted. The last dance is supposed to go with them out on top. Them hoisting up the Lombardi Trophy. Them walking into the sunset, finding new avenues and new career paths. That's what this is supposed to be. Not losing by 5 touchdowns against New Orleans, against famous Jameis Winston, who, remember, eats crab legs and eats fingers and says, that's a W, not that guy. You're not supposed to lose that game. So now Aaron realizes I have to play hardball because ownership gave me everything I want, and if I'm not able to live up to their standard, I'm screwed on the free agent market. I'm screwed next year. But at the same time, it's week one. This is one of those overreaction Monday things I look at and just kind of laugh. Maybe instead of overreacting to this, to Green Bay playing poorly, maybe underreact to how good New Orleans looks defensively. How good New Orleans looks with Jameis Winston as their quarterback. Maybe that's the storyline you need to follow. Maybe that's the game that we need to be talking about. Maybe that's where our conversation needs to go. But what's funny is Aaron also talks about excuses. He said this in the Pat McAfee show about excuses this week.
I don't like to make a lot of excuses for interceptions. You know, there's some ones, there's some, you know, ones you wish you had back. There's some ones that really aren't your fault. That one was entirely due to the double nut shot I took. Somebody will go back and watch it. But I stepped up in the pocket. I was going to throw it across my body to Devontae. It was on the shallow cross. And, you know, it's a ball I've thrown in practice before. I didn't feel bad about that throw. And right before I'm throwing it, I took a left kind of clothesline that, you know, A.J. Hawk or Brady Papanga clothesline. And somebody on the right, you know, with a right kind of cross, double nut shot that, you know, I guess I got to overcome that and throw a better ball. That was a painful one. They got their money's worth on that one.
The only thing I will say is I will never give Aaron Rodgers an excuse, because if here's the deal, you're a three-time MVP. You've set records left and right in the NFL. But Michael, as a man, you know this feeling. I know this feeling. Anyone who is a man on this, who listens to this episode or listens to this show, understands this feeling. Getting hit down there hurts. It takes you a hot minute to get better. Like, you know the trick of when, like, someone says, oh, just sit on them, and then like, they lift you up and then they drop you? Have you ever had that happen?
No.
Oh, me and my buddies do it all the time. What you do is you cross your hands, and they just barely lift you up off the ground, and they drop you on your keister. And when that happens, apparently you're supposed to get the feeling back down there. I give you that. If you don't get that done and it doesn't work, it usually takes you, what, 7-8 minutes to probably recover fully with all the nerves, something like that. I'll give you the excuse of, hey, if you throw three interceptions on those type of plays where, God, the left one, hike, the right one. Yeah, I mean, at least you can say, well, he got hit in the nuts. I mean, it it hurts. It's one of those things where, yeah, I get that. I do think, though, that Green Bay, we're talking about this overreaction, they're going to play their best ball on Monday night, prime time. Aaron Rodgers is going to have like 450 yards passing. Now that Jeff Okuda, their starting cornerback for the Detroit Lions, is out with the torn Achilles, they're going to be fine. Like, in my opinion, they're going to be easily just super fine. You know who else is going to be fine? New England. Every year we talk about them trying to find the heir apparent to Tom Brady. And we looked at this for a while. Remember when they drafted Ryan Mallett and people said, oh man, is this the heir apparent to Tom Brady? Remember when they drafted Jared Stidham and they said, oh man, is this going to be the guy who takes over for TB12? Then they go ahead and they draft Mac Jones in the first round, and it feels like this is the right guy. It feels like this is the guy who fits exactly what Bill Belichick wants. When you remember Tom Brady coming out way back in 2000, he was quiet. He didn't really do much talking. He kind of listened. He really stepped up. He tried to do everything that was asked of him, being a yes, sir man instead of a me first man. Mac Jones is kind of doing the same thing. And even though they lost against the Miami Dolphins on Sunday, I actually walk away feeling better about Mac Jones as a quarterback long term than I do Tua. Maybe it's because I think Mac Jones can have a better arm. Maybe it's because I think Mac Jones can have better footwork. Maybe it's because Mac Jones is better suited for the system ran inside of New England. But I look at Mac Jones and his performance, 286 passing yards, touchdown pass, didn't have a turnover. I look at his performance and I go, if this is what is going to be run for the next 15 years in New England, which it very well could, we don't know how long Bill Belichick's going to coach. And we also don't know if Josh McDaniels is just going to take over as the next head coach, which would make a lot of sense because of why else would he turn down the job in Indianapolis back in 2018 if he wasn't going to get the head coaching job. If that's the case, I feel like New England's in a very good spot. So they lose, and Mac Jones has this to say about losing.
Yeah, I think just the big thing is just moving on to the next week and learning from certain plays, whatever it might have been. If you felt like, hey, I should have done this or been more patient, all right, let's work on that this week or whatever. So just try and, I mean, you don't want to change a lot of stuff every week, but you want to kind of take what you can do better and just focus on it in practice, even if it's like a fundamental thing, like bend your knees a little more or whatever. Just focus on that, and then it kind of gives you like a goal to work towards during the week. And then moving forward for this week, I think it's just more about us, just focusing on what we need to do. And just moving on, because the last game's the last game, and now we're just ready to play against a really good team in the Jets.
For starters, no, the Jets are not a good team, but I mean, I guess credit to you, Mac, for giving them success. But have you noticed, if you go back and listen to Tom Brady back in 2002, 2003, very quiet guy, didn't really do a lot of talking, let his game do the talking. Mac Jones is kind of following that same suit. He's not talking much. He's not out there saying, oh, you know, I believe that this team can do this. Very much quiet. A lot of He's thinking about the game. He's not thinking about the press. He's not thinking about, you know, losing to Tua. He's not thinking about what this means for his legacy after one game. He's thinking about the next week ahead. I like the fact that he says, I'm going to give it a week. I'm going to give myself 24 hours to recuperate. 24 hours, and then I'm on to the next week. Can he actually do that is the question. Think about it. It takes a minute for some people to get over a loss. It helps a lot when you have a good game. Mac Jones had a very good game against the likes of Miami. He had a very good game. He moved the ball. He was consistently finding the clock on third down. He consistently was recording plays with receivers, making moves left and right, doing a very good job of controlling the ball. All the things you want to see in a rookie quarterback. But he's quiet. He's not a guy who's going to be the rah, rah, rah kind of person in the locker room. But then again, New England has never been that. Tom Brady is a guy that people want to play for because of his success on the field. He's not a guy that when you look at in the locker room, being the one to lead you in a battle. At least not in the public eye. Maybe he is behind closed doors. But there are two types of leaders in the world. There are ones who have to speak with volume, and then there are those who are quiet. Both can work. It matters what system you're in. It matters the type of offense you play in. It matters about where you land. Remember when we were talking about way back in March? Remember when I was on the Jake Asman show and I was talking to you guys about where I think certain players fit? There was two places that I thought Mac Jones would be very successful right away. Number one was the Indianapolis Colts. I like what Frank Reich runs, and I think that if you're trying to get something that was resemblance of Carson Wentz, this would be a very good offense to do it in. So they go out and they get Carson Wentz. I look at the New England Patriots as the other team. A team that loves to control the ball, a team that loves to run the football, and a team that relies on offensive line play more than anybody else. It's a very good start for a quarterback who has a lot of questions and a lot of concerns of their deep ball accuracy, of their longevity, of those little things. It gives you time to figure out where you sit. It gives you time to figure out where you are. Mac Jones is in a really good spot. And this is probably going to help Mac Jones more than any other quarterback out there. Perfect scheme fit matters. And right now, when you look at the Patriots, how they're going to run their offense, how they're going to use Mac to be the guy in little bits and portions instead of the whole X factor year one, yeah, I would 100% say he is in the right place at the right time. That's a very scary thought for anyone who thought the dynasty of New England was dead. It may not be alive right now, but it certainly is far from dead. We'll close out just saying it right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
One final thought, as I do every single day with you right here on Just Saying It. It's just a game. It literally is just a game. When you're playing fantasy football, when you're playing, you know, pickup basketball, when you're playing softball league, and I'm in some of these, I love playing this. It's just a game. At the end of the day, you don't need to go ahead and throw your television off a fourth-story window. You don't need to go ahead and break tables. You don't need to go ahead and scream at your mother because of you're pissed off that your team lost by 0.2 points. But worst of all, you don't need to send threats, death comments, and wish ill on a player for suffering an injury. I can't believe I'm going to have to do this bit, but the fact of the matter is that there's some people out there that have now contacted Raheem Mostert of the San Francisco 49ers and wished him death because if he now has a season-ending injury that is forcing him to require surgery. His family had to come out with a statement saying, please stop making death threats at my husband who is a father. Are you really that in love with fantasy football? Is your life that mediocre and sad to where you have to go ahead and call it an athlete for suffering an injury? By the way, this is the one thing I hate about fantasy football. People who think they are required for these athletes to go out and play every single game because I drafted you in the fourth round. I said you were a steal early. Make me right. That's not how the game works, dude. That's not how it is. And more so, if you don't ever want to worry about the injury concerns, don't draft a guy who has injury problems. You want to know what I didn't do this year? Draft Odell Beckham Jr. Guess what I'm feeling right now? Relieved. You know who else I didn't draft this year? Gus Edwards, because I didn't think he was going to be able to make that jump to that next breakout player. Guess who's a little bit right in that conversation? Me, because he's out for the year. There is absolutely no reason whatsoever for you to go ahead and blame a fantasy football player on you having a bad week. And there certainly is no room in today's society for you to contact a player and say, I hope that you X, Y, Z drop dead because if you only got me 0.2 points of fantasy. Dude, grow the heck up if you think that that's the right answer. If you think even close that that's even respectable in the game, you have more problems than losing in your fantasy league. And trust me, I get really mad when I lose my fantasy league. I scream bloody murder. I use words that I've never used in my life. I come up with gibberish and my friends think that I'm having a stroke when I lose in fantasy football. You know what I don't do? I don't contact the player and say, hey, thanks so much for blowing my game. I hope you blow out your left knee next time. Like, who in their right mind is that dumb to make that comment? And hopefully, Raheem Mostert's family finds a way to post your names on social media so I can retweet to know, one, block your butt, and number two, make sure that you never work another day in your life. If you think it's funny to go out and go make fun of players for suffering season-ending injuries, you're the problem. All right, that does it for me. We'll break down all things from Thursday Night Football and much, much more on tomorrow's episode. See you then. Later!